Welcome to the Financial Coconut Podcast Network, the leading personal finance podcast network in Singapore. I'm your host, Reggie, aka Your Chief Financial Coconut, and every Monday you will be joining me, Eric Feng, and SG Budget Babe Dawn on our weekly segment, Wise and Shine, where we leverage on the latest quirky happenings out there on the internet to answer many of your burning social and personal development questions. Yes, we're all sick and tired of talking about money, so welcome back to Wise and Shine.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I love being number one.
I thought you Mr. Positivity.
I be the number one, right? Mr. Yeah. Positivity.
No one else.
I'm the only positive one. Okay?
Whoever's number two is negative.
Okay, welcome back to Wise and Shine, our Monday segment. I really love this segment, you know, because I'm very sian of talking about personal finance all the time. So yeah, my name is Reggie, aka Your Chief Financial Coconut, and we have in the house...
Hi, my name is Eric, Mr. Positivity.
And I'm Dawn.
My name is Eric, Mr. Positivity.
And I'm Dawn, Budget Babe.
Actually, you know, people are getting so familiar, we don't really need to keep introducing ourselves, right? But yeah, we're going to have more guests.
No, you have set. More listeners.
Oh yeah, that is
new
true.
Listeners.
That is true. Yes, yeah.
Remember the market.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. The TAM, right?
Yeah,
TAM is growing. Total addressable market, yeah? So you can check out our other shows if you want to be like more personal finance. I really
but
did this
on
thing.
On this episode, on this show at least, it's all about becoming wiser. More.
So that you
becoming
can shine,
the best
right?
version of yourself.
Yeah.
And, you get more enlightened. No, and, I feel enlightened after our episodes.
Yes. I mean, we are blowing our own horns.
It's not that because we are wise, but it's because we are talking about it, you know, because sometimes we don't take time to think, right? But when we chew on those thoughts, we gain new insights.
And the different perspectives also helps us to create new insights.
And I do think for our listeners that pursue personal finance in a very serious fashion, like they tune in every week, you know, they read blogs, they do all these things. A lot of people... On one side, they do struggle with some of the basic ideas in personal finance and then the investing part, all that. But there's another big swath of our listeners and community, right, that are struggling with deeper, more complex issues that can be projected on money or then be projected on personal finance. I think that as we continue to uncover like how we work with environment, like how we work with our emotions a little bit better, then we don't need to spend as much to cope, you know, and all that,
save
right? So there are a lot of all these other things that can be intertwined, and I think that's the value of the show, right?
100%.
But today, we want to focus a little bit on this idea of competition, right? So because recently, I think the national narrative has tuned a little bit into more kumbaya, right? Like more like it's okay not to be okay, you know, like we are growing this together. So there's a lot of kumbaya kind of narrative going on. You don't feel so?
I've always been living in that world.
Yeah. No, but there was a long period of time where it's like you don't eat if you don't eat other people's lunch, other people will eat your lunch.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of those kind of like fighting kind of essence, right? Where it's about competition, it's about your enemy and all of that, right? And I do think that embeds into a lot of other ideas that we do have, that we hold in ourselves, kiasuism, all these things, they're all kind of extended from those spaces. And things have changed, right? But it makes me kind of wonder, like, okay, so have things really changed, or is it just like a narrative building exercise? Which makes me want to talk a little bit today about this whole idea about enemy and competition, right? Like, must your competitor be your enemy? I think that's the question that I really wanted to ask.
It's an easy one, right? I mean, you and I, we're in personal finance. When we started, because you started later, did you view me as your enemy?
No.
And that's why we're here today.
But I think when I first started, I didn't really bother about who is out there. I was just doing my own thing, you know? And it was as I developed and people started comparing. You know, like sponsors come in, they compare. Yeah. You know, because they have to compare, right? They have a limited budget. There are certain goals that they want to achieve. And then they have to compare, okay, what's the best way forward? Who is doing what? You know, who should we sponsor? Or even audiences, they compare, right? I remember that one star audience. And you know, there's in podcasts, you can give 5-star, 4-star, 3-star, whatever. And there's this 1-star audience. Well, shout out to you. One star.
Probably not listening to
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, you know, 1-star. You know, right? Go to Apple and look at that 1-star. Screenshot and share. Okay, so this 1-star audience say things like, oh, this could have been a great podcast, but I hate the person's voice. I was like, bro.
So personal.
It's a personal attack.
So yeah. Personal.
You don't win it all, you know. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. So where you celebrate it.
Yeah. But essentially, there's a lot of, as I develop further, there's more and more competition, right? Like I start to look at, like, people compare me and I have to compete with all these different mediums and different influencers, different platforms to then compete for listeners, compete for audience, compete for, you know, sponsor money and all these other things, right? So to me, I didn't start with competition because I didn't bother about it. But as I move forward, I start to have to care about it because
environment.
Yeah. So I think that's that part. So maybe we start with trying to talk a little bit about, is there a difference between competition and enemy?
Yes, of course. Competition is very neutral, is very factual. Enemy is a lot more emotional. So let me explain. Like, I mean, in a classroom of 40, right, everyone is your competitor, right? Because you're being graded against all of your friends. There's someone going to be number one, number two, number three. So they are your competition. When you go for a job interview, you're going to compete with 3 other candidates or 5 other candidates. But when we start to hate on that person, or we start to feel negative emotions towards a person, then that person has a new label now. It becomes your enemy, and it also implies that the person is here to hurt you, to destroy you, to harm you. So when you start to have that kind of narrative, then naturally you start to label your competitor as an enemy.
But it fundamentally means that both your competitor and your enemy actually share the same incentive structure against you. The only divergence, the only difference is that you add a layer on top that this person is bad. You know, this person is evil. This person is small. Or this organization or this thing. But if you remove that layer at the top, that means all this coloring, yeah, right, on the person.
Then
right,
it's just your competitor.
Yeah, then they're a competitor. Which means that, you know, there is incentive, you know, friction or divergence that exists fundamentally in all competition, whether you name them as an enemy or not. Is that kind of how I see it? Is that how you guys see it?
Or at least for me, I see it as it's a label. Mm. Right, that competition is very natural. If there is scarce resource, we're all going to be competing, right? But enemy is in another layer where, you know, this guy is going to hurt you, going to harm you, or you have some negative emotions towards it. Because to me, I'm a very competitive person. I love being number one.
I thought you Mr. Positivity.
Well, everybody comes to
a journey,
right?
I'm the number one Mr. Positivity.
Yeah, I'm the number one. Yeah, no one else
I'm the only
ever
positive one. Okay?
Whoever's number two is negative.
So
I'm very naturally competitive, and I would, like, sometimes, especially if I lose out, then I'll feel very negative, right, towards that person. And that's why I'll naturally use the word, oh, he's my enemy, he's my number one enemy. Mm-hmm. But I've came to realize that competition is not a bad thing. Competition, you know, makes sure that you don't sit on your laurels. Competition pays you, right? So
what
it
does
becomes
it mean,
a good
competition
thing for me.
Pays you?
It paces you. You've got someone to pace with, right? Because you look at what your competitors are doing and you go like, wow, you know what? I better step up my game because my competitors are working a lot harder than me. Mm. And it pushes me forward. So that's my perspective. Another thing I also feel is that if you ever hate on your enemy, on your competition, then your emotions get in the way. You cannot see things clearly because your competitors don't always remain as competitors. They can one day be your collaborators.
Let me raise a question. Yeah. Can you guys name an enemy of yours?
Enemy?
Because I fundamentally don't believe that anybody is good or evil. That everybody is maximizing their own interest. Mm. I have a lot of competitors.
But yeah. Do you have an enemy?
I was younger, I used the word enemy a lot. He's my number one enemy.
Yeah,
he's my number two
but
enemy.
But now you struggle, no, right? Yeah, the same thing. And I think that shows it because we're at this stage of life where we realize that labeling someone as an enemy also makes us weaker.
Yeah.
Because we're admitting that they have the power to inflict pain or harm on us. But if we take back that control, they're just a competitor. They're not an enemy. I think I probably have a lot of enemies especially because of how I'm very straightforward on the internet. But I don't see anyone as my enemies. Whether I'm their enemy, it's them, you see? It's not mutual.
Okay.
So when you make someone your enemy, if it's not two ways, aren't you the one who's exhausted? That one-star review? He's the one who's tired, right?
Yeah,
not
yeah.
you. It doesn't really get on you much. It's something for that moment. You're like, one star? Why is this happening? And you look at the feedback. You're like, he hates my voice. Screw it. I can't change anything about my voice. And you move on. But he probably keeps thinking about it, especially if he thinks that you're his enemy.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that he or she or it thinks about it, you know. But it did get to me for a period of time, you know, and I started to question a little bit. But all that is kind of a process, right? Process to kind of process some of these ideas. Eventually, I got to a better viewpoint.
Exactly. Right? And when we recognize that, you know, it's tiring to label people as enemies, just look at them as competitors. That's where the next stage comes in, right? Because like what you say, Eric, your competitor can then be your collaborator.
Yeah,
but if you view them as your enemy, you will never be able to see
exactly.
That.
I
mean, case in point, Romance of Three Kingdoms, isn't that the whole idea, right? That there's always three-legged stool, and you know, whoever that's the strongest, that's our enemy, then the other two become collaborators. But when one becomes stronger, then you know the power shifts.
Yeah, exactly.
Because or like maybe the world now, they see Putin as their enemy, so one's really collaborating with him. But what if they could see a different point?
Because
of view?
If you see, compete implies me against you.
Exactly.
But if I stop seeing the world as they are all my competitors, but we are collaborators, or one day we can be collaborators, we might actually see new ways, new synergies, new ways of working together.
Yeah, but the whole enemy thing perfumes mainstream narrative. Good versus bad, right versus wrong, left versus right, hero, villain, Putin, Biden,
because it's easier. You know,
yeah, exactly.
It's convenient.
Exactly. And that's the part.
Right. So you have to question our values and our culture.
Because once you remove a moral view on these things, then it becomes a very complicated discussion. What are your goals? What are my goals? What's your incentive? Where you come from? What resources I have? What you have?
Also, tiring. You know? It's just easier to label the person
evil,
enemy.
Bad enemy. You know,
I mean,
nemesis.
Think about it, right? Like your parents. I remember then my parents is, you know, your Bao Xing, you know, Bao Xing doing better than you, you know.
Shout out to Bao Xing.
Okay, we're not friends anymore. But you know, so I noticed that my mom will kind of make it antagonistic to kind of fight, make me have that fire and drive to almost beat my enemy, you know. So I guess that's how probably the higher powers like to use, like that.
Yes.
If you think about it, there's this movie called Wag the Dog. Damn beautiful movie. So it basically talks about I might get the title wrong, we will change it if we need to, but this is the context, yeah? This president was going for his re-elections and then got found cheating with his secretary. Kind of remember someone else, right? And so he realized his public ratings was dropping. So he decided, what should I do? So a PR agency said, oh, very easy. Let's create an enemy. Let's create a bad guy. Let's create terrorism. How do we do it? Okay, let's hire a film director to do it. So they create a whole entire scene and they make the entire world believe that there was a war being fought in that country and that he positioned himself as a hero. And you see, the thing is that if you can't unite people, just create a common enemy and you automatically unite people. So it's a very good way to control people when I have an enemy. Because if your attention is on that bad guy, then I automatically become your good guy. That's why we say, if you want to be friends together, just throw stones at your enemies. So I felt that word is a very, very powerful tool that can be used for control, power, and leadership.
Yes. And I think that's a great highlight to recognize that narrative building in itself is a weapon. Right? If you subscribe to a certain narrative and the narrative is trying to anchor at something or attack someone, then it rallies and that in itself is a weapon. That in itself is an act of war.
Yeah.
Trying to build narratives of enemies and all that, right? So, but day to day, it's a bit tiring, right? To keep holding on to those things, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is, you know, pushing aside the idea of an enemy, there is competition, right? The reality is we have a lot of competitors around us, right? And I wanted to kind of double down and highlight on the discussion of like your competitors can be your collaborators, right? So when does that dynamics change, right? Because in my worldview, competitors means your incentives are not aligned, right? You're disjointed and you are all fighting over something similar, right? And you're disjointed. But how do you then change from a competitor to become a collaborator?
When there's a mutual benefit. That means when me and you combine together, we become a lot stronger. Case in point, right? Like, let's say, for example, I'm a speaker and I specialize in one topic, and then you are a speaker, you specialize also in one topic, but we're very similar, so we're always competing.
Yes.
And then we realize, oh my god, so our client has been playing us against each other.
Yes.
Say, oh, you know, we're going to thinking about hiring Eric, okay, so you give us a better price.
Oh my god, yeah, it right? always happens. Yeah.
So they play up against yes, you. Yes. So now we become controlled by our client.
Yeah.
But if I now work with him and say, you know what, let's work together. If any client come to me, I will also pitch you in. Mm. And if any client comes to you, pitch you in, then you and I win, and we help our client, the client win as well.
Or you talk about your rate so that the client don't get to spin tails about it.
Yeah, so I feel that that's where your competitor, quote, can become a collaborator if both of you will work together, create a new benefit, a new value.
Yeah. I think also we need to recognize that there are certain points, certain circumstances where resources are finite.
Yeah.
Like a job or that first prize in a book competition.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But other aspects, there may be infinite rewards for everyone.
And it's still fine. Even if it's a finite reward, right? It makes me better as a person. Like, okay, you know, I don't know if you guys feel that way, but I work better when I've competition.
Mm.
Because I felt like I want to be better because that's my value. I want to be better. So when I know that there's finite resource, a client can only pick one person for a conference, I will work really, really, really hard to
prove
be,
that you are the most the best worthy choice. One.
Yeah. And that makes, in the process, makes me a better speaker.
Simon Sinek has a very good story around this.
Okay.
So he calls it the worthy rival.
Mm.
That in order to improve, we yes, always need to keep one. Finding the worthy rival, and that person makes us even better.
And his one is Adam Grant.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The smart guy. Both are all equally smart. And now they're finally working together on a book.
So who is your rival then? Who is your worthy rival? Can say it.
My competition, yeah, right? Yeah, I think in the so okay. So I said, I won't want to use the word rival. Okay,
yes, because rival has some level of enemy. Yes. How about your biggest competitor?
Your worthy competitor.
I would say that in the case I specialize in the insurance tech space, right? So anybody else who is also teaching about social media would be a competitor to me as well. Which is also why I learned something that you don't have to fight to be better. You just got to fight to be different.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one is able to then assess whether you are better than another person or not. Because better is subjective.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's more important that when you are competing, don't compete outwards, you compete inwards. What do I mean? That means dig deep into yourself to ask yourself, what's your unique selling point? What's your differentiation?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a lot easier to create your own blue ocean, right? But I'm saying that if you try to keep competing, right, you at most just be number one or number two. But if you find your uniqueness, right, you won't compete, you dominate.
Mm.
Yeah, and when you dominate, you're the only one, your category of one, which is why I feel that we should always dig deep to find our USP,
mm-hmm.
and then we communicate that, we'll be able to attract people who will only want to work with us and no one else. Then you have no competition.
For those who don't know what USP is, it's unique selling point.
Yeah. But to be clear, sometimes you're just not unique. There is validity. There's validity in that point. Because a lot of people, I mean, I'm very annoyed with this kind of things. Like, oh, find your unique selling point. It's like, yeah, I get it. But you know, I'm really just not that unique. Right,
and that's when your competition forces you now to go and find one or to develop yourself further until you have one.
And I think that's the next step, right? But rather than lie to yourself that you're unique, or my unique selling point is like you're not very unique. Bro.
Have you thought that uniqueness is just a blend?
It's just a what?
A blend.
Okay.
And everyone has different blends. It's like, you know, 60% courage, 20% your percentages are always different because of who you innately are.
Yes.
And that's what makes you unique. So it's not that you're not unique. It's just that you don't recognize your blend is unique enough.
Because you don't look inwards. You keep looking outwards and try to outdo your competition.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But you forgot that if you look inwards, you might be able to find your own space.
Exactly.
No, but if you believe in normal distribution, then you recognize that at any one point in time, there is a bulk of people that are not unique.
So that's why it's a scarcity versus abundance mindset.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, as in, to me, right, the whole abundance kind of mindset thing, I get it. I understand what it's trying to say. But to me, from a base idea, is that at some point in time, there are a bulk of people that just stick the same position and they believe the same thing. That's why normal distribution exists, right? And when I look at it from that viewpoint, and I don't try to challenge these things because to me, it is just the natural order of how it is. It's like how you know, we can sit here and do all these talks, right? And do all this. We are all not normal. We're all very unique in our own. Because if you are normal, nobody wants to watch you. Mm. You know, because my listeners always tell me like, oh yeah, you're very different. I said, of course, if I'm the same as you, why you listen to me?
Yeah.
Right? And the reality is at any one point, there is a bulk view. There's a bulk idea, right? There are bulk things that...
Mainstream.
Yeah. So, which is why I'm always looking for alternatives, right? So if you look at from a normal distribution view curve, in the middle is mainstream, right? On the side is alternative, right? Further out is xiao. Right, so ideas sit on a.
But when you're CL, that's where you have less competition, lor.
Yeah.
So it depends what game you want to play.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So some people seek safety in being normal.
Yes. So it's not a right or wrong kind of situation, but just recognizing that at some point in time, there are commonalities, and if you fall within the commonality, it's fine, right? But if you want to stand out, then you got to take a different position and kind of repackage yourself, right? Yeah, which is all the whole USP.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I want to push a little bit on the whole like competition within the office kind of situation, right? So because I think sometimes you work in corporate, right? Then you have all these different teams that do the same thing, right? Maybe they got like one agency got like five design teams, you know, or like five brand teams, right? Or you work in finance and then like everybody is pretty much doing the same thing, you know, and they're all trying to push out similar ideas, or they're trying to push out They all have similar incentive structures. They are measured in the same way, but they're pushing out differently, trying to be different, right?
Mm.
And in such a situation, it renders the game a finite game, right? Where there's only one winner.
Yeah, Squid Game.
Right, yeah. There's only one person that's going to get promoted, right? Amongst the five leaders in the design firm, only one person is going to get promoted, which is why there's a very big tendency when amongst the five competitors, if someone pulls out and starts to align with another person, it's like, oh, I don't want to fight, you know, I just align with you. I'll be your number two. Suddenly, our interest is aligned.
Yeah. That's because walls are fought.
Yeah, because I'm not fighting anymore. I'm aligning myself with you, so you will not attack me now. Yeah. But I become the competitor of the other people.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that is a recognition of a change in incentive structure where we are no longer competing. I have chosen my position to be the number two or the number three of this other person that I feel has a higher chance of winning. Mm-hmm. Or this other team has a higher chance of winning. And then we just come together. And then in that case, you and I, we're no longer competitors. We come together, we collaborate.
Yep.
Our incentives change. Yeah. Any thoughts on that?
I think the office is a natural finite game.
Yes.
Because you see, the resources are allocated from the top. Yes. It's out of our control.
You can only have one.
Yeah, you only can have one senior director, right? And having two just doesn't make sense in terms of compensation and everything else as well. But therein lies the question, are you okay to be in that situation? Or do you want to go somewhere else where you can then be number one and take the director role for yourself? I think everyone's response will be different. Some people are content to not be number one. Mm. So they're content to not engage in a competition, but merely be a good sidekick because they like the stability that their job gives them. They value the relationships, the people in that workplace, and they're worried if they go elsewhere, they will lose that.
Yes.
Or maybe because they've worked for so long at that company that they've accumulated so much, you know, long-term benefits, and they don't want to say goodbye to that. Even if going to another place may give them a higher pay raise, but it may come with like stress and new people that they don't know whether they can click with.
Yes.
So if you're okay to not compete, then I think it's fine.
Mm.
And there's nothing wrong in being a sidekick or being part of the team.
Yes.
I think it all boils down to, would that make you happy and are you okay to give certain things up? What do you gain in giving up something? And if you find that your gains outweigh what you have given up, then I think it's okay. So like Mr. Positivity, for example, if you are not number one Mr. Positivity, but you are number two, but in exchange, you actually made friends with whoever this imaginary new Mr. Number One is.
Yep.
And that Mr. Number One opens a lot of doors to you because he don't see you as number two. He sees you as a worthy rival. You would probably feel okay, right? Even though you said your nature is already very competitive.
So I feel that it also depends on our values, though. What's more important? Is it being number one for the sake of being number one, or being number one because I thought that being number one allows me to be able to impact more people, but now collaborating, I'm number two, I collaborate number one, I get to now impact other people, so I'm happy now. right? So I guess that competition aside, I think very important to have self-awareness, to understand, you know, what your core values are, and that competition isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's a story we tell, that competition could make you better. Competition is great in some organizations, especially in sales, right? Because when everybody compete, everybody gets better. Imagine if everybody decide not to compete, then the entire organization also cannot function, right? So yeah, it depends on the values.
No, but pushing from values, right? I get the whole value kind of discussion. I also want to talk a little bit about your abilities. 你有没有这个本钱去争? Do you have these resources and this ability to go and compete? And I think that's the part that we don't talk about it in mainstream media. You know, we don't talk about it even in our broader society. We always ask ourselves, you know, is this what you want? Do you have value? You know, is this aligned with your views? But the reality is, do you even have the resource to compete? Do you have the political power to compete? Are you like the most popular amongst, let's say this, stand, we're back to the same scenario, right? Five design leaders trying to like fight for the next senior director role, right? Are you the most popular amongst them? Do you have the highest hit rate in your design profile? Are you getting highest sales numbers, right? Do you have the ability and the resources to then compete? I think that is a big part of the discussion that is lacking. You know, like that. You sometimes you just have to recognize that,
In this game, you can't win.
Yeah, I just can't. I'm not good enough in this game. You know, like I cannot be a lang lang. You know, I cannot.
That's why it's about choosing the right fight.
Yes, that is, and the very fact that you need to choose the right fight and to choose a good fight, you must know where you stand.
Self awareness,
right? And so it's not all just about value and worth and all that, but really zooming down the practicality, how much resources you have, how popular are you, you know, what kind of financial structures are you in, how much money do you have, right? Like do you have a big golden, you know, 金山银山 at the back, right? And you can do whatever you wanna, do whatever you wanna do, and then you can go and fight it out, right? So I think that's the part that is a very realistic, very real concerns that people don't talk about as much.
Well, because they have to face the facts, right?
And that's you gotta face that fact, right? That you just don't have enough
what it takes.
Yeah, you don't know what it takes to compete.
And I can relate, you know. Actually, when I was young, I had a lot of childhood aspirations. But the one that gets told the most often is that I wanna be a writer, right? I actually also wanted to be a dancer. I also wanted to be a singer, and I also wanted to be an actress. But what I realized was I'm not pretty enough to act. So screw it. There goes that dream.
You need to be pretty to act? Back then, is it?
It's a better advantage.
Okay.
Right?
Well, I think now it's still the case. It's a little bit better, but it's still the case. Yeah. That's a different discussion.
And then like, in terms of dancing, I just couldn't outperform no matter how hard I tried. I couldn't beat some of the better dancers. Yes. Because they were just naturally taller.
The body, flexibility,
and I was just not born that way. And even though, like, I remember in Chinese dance, right, in younger, lower primary school, right, I was training for my split. And my sister got it so naturally. My teacher was pressing down on my legs and I still couldn't get it.
I still cannot.
I had to train, actually. And it took me many years. Even I only achieved my split in, sadly, university.
Oh no, but you never gave up. That's amazing. That's amazing.
But I didn't do all the way also. So on our day I finally got it.
Right? That's how you
Exactly. And then like I wanted to sing, but one problem with me is I always get sore throat. I'm very prone to getting sore throat.
Like
and
today.
I never learned to today.
Shout out, Don't work very hard for us. Yes, please.
If you can't hear my voice, it's a little bit different because I have a little sore throat going on right now, but it's not COVID, don't worry. Anyway, back to the story. I was always getting sore throat more frequently than all of my peers. And I realized like even if I could go go for singing classes and be a good singer, I just can't remove this fact that I'm always getting sore throat, and that will hinder my career. So I chose not to pick and not to go down these routes. I think all of us can have similar stories in our lives, right? Like listeners, what was a childhood ambition that you love and you really wanted to be, but why didn't you pursue that route? Maybe because we recognized that there was something that would inhibit us from achieving our fullest potential over there.
And the reality is sometimes I'm just not good enough to fight this fight, right? And if I'm not good enough, then might as well I pick a side.
Exactly. Right? Sometimes you're not pretty enough, not good looking enough, not tall enough.
Okay. If I'm not good enough, I'd rather pick a side. Yes, I agree. Like, if it's life and death and all. But I always think that it's always worth a fight. You know, there's a saying, right? If you aim for the stars, if you miss the stars, you can at least hit the clouds. So even if, let's say, singing, right? You know, I might not be very good at singing. I might not be very successful in today's world of singing. But, you know, if anybody come to me, I would, first of all, help the person acknowledge that he's not that good. Maybe he's only a 3 upon 10. But if he feels it's worth it to still compete because that competition forces him to, you know, add another 3 more points. Because if he gives up, he's just going to remain as a 3 upon 10. Right? Or he decided that, oh, I'm not going to sing. I'm just going to play drums. And absolutely be a sidekick, like you said. That absolutely will not develop skills. So for me, I would say that, no, if you really want to do it, then just give it a try.
I think we also need to recognize that fighting a competition or even engaging in one, playing the game in the first place requires energy.
Yes.
And we all have finite. Yeah.
As long as he plays that game with open eyes, that it's going to be tough for you. You're not going to be as good as other people. But you will get better than what you are right now. And if you're okay with that growth and that progress, by all means, go do it. But do it with open eyes.
If you ask me, I'll just be like, yeah, screw this. Choosing something where you can fight a better fight. And if winning is important to you, then choose somewhere where you can
That's
win.
Why the value part comes in. Like, is your value winning? What are your goals? If your value is winning, then of course you pick games that you can win where the odds are stacked, not against you, right? But if growth is important to you, then who cares? I don't mind being number 3, number 4, because by competing myself in number 1, I got better.
That's why self-awareness
I want to
add another thing. So like, you know, for some people, competition brings stress.
Tell me about
I think it still does. Like,
it does.
I think for everybody it does.
Different levels, right?
Yes.
And you need to find the fight or the competition that motivates and stresses
and
you up
give you
enough without sending you over the hill. One example from my younger years, right, was when I had to decide which JC to go to. For the record, I didn't even want to go to JC. Asian parents.
Oh my God.
I wanted to go
to polytechnic and
study mass comm right from the start. But my parents were like, no, you don't know what you're doing. Listen to us. Go to JC. Go JC, then can go uni. Go poly, can I go uni. Okay, but anyway. Yeah. So I went, I had to choose which JC to go to. And with my point, I was able to go to JCA versus JCB. When I weighed the pros and cons of each, I realized JCA was very good. I would be the borderline case, but if I go in there, I'm not the best. And because I knew that I'm the kind where if I'm the last, it really affects me. Whereas if I go in and I'm middle or above average, it's easier for me to climb towards the top. And that motivates me because I know at least I'm better than some people already. I feel like I can go even better. But when I'm the last, I'm the most.
You set yourself up to fail already.
It affects me a lot. I chose to go to the other JC, JCB. And because I was aware of this, I eventually became a top student. But I think that would not have happened if I went into JCA.
So understanding your tolerance for stress, because competition does create stress, right?
Correct.
But there's good stress, bad stress, so you also have to know where the balance is.
Yes, and the good thing about life is that most of the time we can pick our competition. So I think having the ability to, I think the difficult thing is that when we are young, when we're a child, sometimes our competition gets picked for us. But if you're in a position where you can recognize it and fight, so I obviously had to explain to my parents why I wanted JCB. They're like, you should go to JCA. I'm like, no, I feel like and eventually I won out.
Okay, great.
It turned my life around. Because of that, I was able to climb to the top. I was a class leader. It fueled and built up my self-confidence so much. So I would not probably be doing all this public speaking work if not for that. If I had gone down JCA path, I would probably have turned into some depressed kid. They're always wondering why I can never make it in life. Why I study so hard, but I'm always still the 41st in class, you know. Whereas on the other end, I was like, oh, I studied hard. I'm number 7. I didn't study. I'm 14. Hey, not so bad. Well, I'm still not the last. Now I study, I can be number 1. So it plays a lot of games in your mind. And picking the right fights, I think it's a very important trait that everyone must learn to do in life.
And I do think the playing field in Singapore is very narrow. Right, that's why it's like whatever you do, right? Whether you are a designer, you are work in finance, you work in, you know, you want to be a dancer. In Singapore, there's only so many top positions in that sense, right?
Because we're a small market.
Yeah,
we're
a small market, right? But if you go out, right, you can totally be a number 1 piano teacher in Klang. So I'll be like number 1 dancer in Penang. You can do that, right? Because the market is way bigger. You want to go even smaller, you can go more, whatever, right? So geography and going to different places, they do add up, right? And and there are a lot of other fights, right? But for a lot of Singaporeans tuning in, I get it, the fight is stiff, right? And as the game continues to progress, the fight only gets stiffer. Right, because people will accumulate, you know, resources and influence and power. So, quick tip, if you're thinking about this thing, right, try to go to places that are greener, newer. If you join newer sectors, for whatever reason, you know, and in different spaces, the chances of you succeeding is much higher.
Yep.
And I think newer spaces are more collaborative as well.
Yes.
That whole essence of competition is not as ingrained because, like, in startup culture, you're working towards a bigger goal of helping the startup IPO or succeed or beat a other established player.
Yeah.
But if you go in an established player where they're already number one, you're competing within your own teams, your own departments and resources.
Agreed.
So that's the inherent difference, I feel.
Great. I think that's a good thing. One last thing
is we need to also remember competition can sometimes give you friends.
Tell me more.
So when you recognize, like, I'll give an example. I'm friends with the woke salary man. We didn't start out as such because I didn't know who they were. I was just like, oh wow, this new competition is rising and they're stealing a lot of the competitors' dollars. They're even getting sponsorship money that are non-finance. And I was just very amazed. And then, like, when I finally got to meet them and got to know them in person, now we share so many other resources together. When clients try to pit us against one another, we share. We're like, hey, how much are you charging for this? Oh, I'm X dollars. Okay, I'm X. And because we share that information, right, we're no longer competitors for the same, but we become more collaborative. And in recognizing that, we're also now better friends for it. I'm great friends with also Dollars and Cents because we recognize that we play in different verticals and we collaborate a lot. So we do, like, interviews, we do different projects, different events together because we recognize that we're not competitors. And because we all have, like, sometimes when it, like what you say, when you have a common enemy, you all become united.
All united.
And sometimes your best friends can be found when you have that. Like, I'm really good friends with my JC girlfriend because we had to fight the A-level competition. And we bonded through it.
Nice.
And in life, you become very close to certain friends or your spouse because you fight against a common evil or something, right? Be it, let's say, like, people who have to go through illnesses, you fight that illness together with your caregiver and you become so strong together. And I think that's something that people always miss out on. They forget because you, when you think of competition, you often see yourself as you against everyone else. But it can be you and people and some trusted aides against a larger force.
So the moral of the story is to unionize, right? Oh, we need to unionize.
It's
right?
Like, we're now friends because we're fighting against the common enemy or the common evil, common competition of being normal, boring, listening to whatever narrative you're being fed without questioning it and just going with whatever the news is reporting in a certain narrative without asking why is it such, what's the larger value, right? So we have something in common now and competition can be that commonality.
Great. Once again, unionize. So that's why I always go to networking events with all the influencers. And charge out, saying, "Niao raise, increase."
So already-
then we can all increase, right? So we can talk about that off camera, right? But yeah, I think great episode today because I think it kind of discovered a little bit of the nuance between an enemy and a competitor, and how can you then kind of convert the competition dynamics into something more collaborative, right? And and recognize that, hey, if you
you're just not made for some competition,
just move on, find another competition, right?
If winning is important,
to you. Any other things you picked away from today's episode?
No, I think if there's books that you guys might want to read to expand on this, right? There's two books, right? We all know this book by Sun Tzu. Bingfa, Art of War, right? So a lot of times business are very competitive. They study a lot of the philosophies from Sun Tzu. But now there's this new school of thought, which is Zheng He Xia Si Yang, which is a very collaborative philosophy. So don't have to make wrong about competition or don't have to try to idolize and put collaboration on the pedestal. Ask yourself, what environment are you in? Will competing help you get what you want, or will collaborating help you get what you want? See it as tools rather than, you know, labeling it, because the minute you label, it's either one or zero. Right? And when that happens, then either way, you win.
I believe also being friends with your competitor can often open up a lot more markets and opportunities for you because none of us are perfect. And we all have different strengths, right? It's only when we all come together and play on our strengths as a group that we open up more.
But there's a disclaimer, there's a catch. They must share the same values. Because some people in the front, they say, oh, collaborate if you collaborate with
you,
but actually they're there to hurt you, you know what I mean? So as long as they have the same values, same goals, then I think we can work together. Otherwise, it's just a disguise.
Don't let me start. That could be another 30 minutes.
Reggie must have some
a lot, right? Annoyed by those people. But yes, I mean, at the end, I don't want to judge people's morality. Everybody has their own viewpoint, their own moral structures, but there is a reality where we are not aligned.
Yeah.
Right. And if we're not aligned, then we can either compete or we can just distance ourselves. I think that's kind of where I am. Okay, good. So I think that's a great episode today. If you have any other horrifying questions about competition, you can put it in the comment section.
Or share with us your biggest horror stories when it comes to competitors.
Think about
when was the last time you had an enemy, or can you identify anyone right now?
Is the enemy your friend?
Yeah.
Is your enemy yourself?
Zoe's making
us think.
I mean, that's why she's on the set, right? If she's not making us think, then why is she here? Right? So, thank you for today. We'll see you all next week. Take care. Bye.
Happy winning.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.